This is an excerpt from Welcome to the Machine, pages 214 to 218. Try to destroy the machine and those in power will kill you. What do we do? How's this for a first step? Let's climb out of our cars, mentally and physically, and try walking again. Remember your body? It's not a concept. It's not virtual reality. It's an animal. Animals are us, remember? If technology isn't neutral, and using it isn't free, and beating it is difficult, maybe we need to redefine the problem. Instead of building a better mousetrap, can we ask whether we want to be trapping mice or ourselves? Can we turn off the machines in our own lives long enough to hear ourselves think and talk, and to hear our human neighbors think and talk, and to hear our non-human neighbors think and talk, and hear the land itself thinking and talking, and reconsider what strange fruit we're making and for whom it's made, and whether there might indeed be an alternative reality available, one that came before cynicism and surfeit? Most of us, most of the time, see technology and technological progress as imperatives. Some of us are against technology, and some of us are all for it, but most of us are ambivalent as we slave away. Most people see the machine culture as an imperative, with a life and a will, virtual though they may be, of its own. But nuclear power plants and automobiles and polyvinyl chloride are no more inevitable than an addiction to candy bars. A machine is not a living being. It has no will. It is as rational, blind, willless, and disciplined, does what it's programmed to do, as Weber thought the bureaucrats to be. A machine is only as automatic as its computer program and its supply of fuel and its human addicts allow it to be. Do we want to be machines, blind and obedient, manufacturing, consuming plastic and foil-wrapped artificially flavored candy that goes in one end and out the other without a trace of nutrition? In the 1970s, the U.S. Senate Church Committee, after an investigation leading to shocking, to some, revelations of the U.S. government's illegal spying and institutionalized murder and mayhem, came up with 96 recommendations. And we forgive them for that, for they were, after all, lawmakers, ranging from Congressional and Justice Department oversight of intelligence committees, to limiting those agencies' budgets, to forbidding intelligence agencies from domestic spying and covert activities unless there's suspicion of criminal activity, to not collecting unnecessary personal information about American citizens, to obtaining judicial warrants allowing domestic spying, to prohibiting the collection of information on the political beliefs, political associations, or private lives of Americans, quote, except that which is clearly necessary for domestic security investigations, end quote, to centralizing domestic security investigations under the FBI, and prohibiting the military, the National Security Agency, and the IRS from domestic spying. We have seen how centralization, secrecy, and rules are three inherent characteristics of bureaucracies. Unfortunately, the committee's recommendations were basically a call for more centralization and more rules. A generation later, there is congressional oversight over intelligence agencies, but wiretapping warrants are much easier to gain and domestic spying is much easier to do legally. When violations of civil liberties and privacy are disclosed, the best civil rights lawyers come up with virtually the same prescriptions: more oversight, more centralization, more rules. It seems the disease has progressed, but not the medicine. So we might cast our jaundiced eyes beyond modern progress and attend to Lao Tzu, who warned that rules and structures were for people without responsibility and awareness, and that punishments arose only when people wouldn't govern themselves. He also pointed out that the more rules were promulgated, the more criminals there would be. Lao Tzu lived a long, long time ago, but he already saw the danger of device and recommended that people reduce their dependence on technology and stay close to home. A couple millennia later, Ralph Waldo Emerson lamented that work and days were offered us and we chose work. We can choose days and save time. Gardens are for those who don't have time for supermarkets and all their consequences. Walking is for those who don't have time for driving. And there's more to gain than time, though we'll enjoy lots of that too when we return to the real world. Just do it. The late U.S. Senator J. William Fulbright wrote, "In a democracy, dissent is an act of faith." We write, "In a machine, awareness is an act of freedom." The controversies over privacy and security ought actually to be about technology and fascism. Privacy and security are worse than false hopes. They're distractions. We're going down the ecological and social tubes, so there is no security. and privacy never existed except in the fantasies of those who saw themselves as separate from their fellow beings. The human nervous network is a complex of billions of neurons and synapses washed in biochemicals sending subtle, multi-leveled messages. Human communities consist in part of millions of these nervous networks interacting. More than human communities consist in part of millions of species interacting in verbal and nonverbal ways. We can't fathom the world, much less control it, much less redesign it after our ambitions impoverish goals. By trying to monitor everyone's behavior and thinking, and by trying to compel everyone else to follow rules, we reveal our ignorance of the complexity and subtlety of human cultures and the natural world. Best to relax our obsessions with security and control, pay attention to what's going on in ourselves and others as best we can, and respond using our entire sensibilities and collective intelligence. A computer can intercept and record telephone and email messages, but it cannot make sense of them. Computers are no substitute for intelligence. Rules are no substitute for human and non-human communities' evolved ways of interacting together. Closed-circuit TV cameras are no substitute for social cohesion. Sense-making cannot be tacked together with a computer programmer's codes. Security cannot be had with weapons and spying. You cannot keep up with the machine's schedule of production. You cannot recycle industrial waste. You cannot create or replace a forest, a wetland, a human culture, a non-human culture, a language. I often think about the religion of my youth and wonder what it would have been like to grow up knowing another sort of God. One who did not sit at the center of a universal panopticon and sort us all. To heaven with this one, to hell with the other. One who did not wield power from a distance. One who did not live in the sky. One without an oversight that is always possible and, conveniently, never verifiable. How would our culture be different if we recognize that the sacred resides instead in our own bodies and in the bodies of those humans and non-humans who are our neighbors and companions in the world? What sort of society would we evolve if we understood that truth is multivaried and just as manifest in dragonflies, phoebes, and drops of rain as in humans? How would our society look, and how would the world look, if our gods and goddesses valued life over power? How would we look if we valued life over power? And what would happen if we rejected the myth of the machine and the machine itself?